Thank you. Thank you very much, Chris Kennedy, for those over-the-top words. To have such an introduction by Chris Kennedy, obviously he himself the beneficiary, as he mentioned, of a large family, but a family that has given so much to this nation, and he has given so much to the state of Illinois. He and his wife Sheila have truly been a gift to the state. And the effort he puts in, and so many efforts, and the effort he has put in as chairman of the university is a great statement about their belief in Illinois and their belief in higher education. So thank you very much, Chris. To President Hogan, to Chancellor Easter, the distinguished faculty who are with us today, Illini faithful, and most importantly, the graduates of the class of 2011. When I was asked to be the commencement speaker at this great day, I was reminded of wise words from the former governor of New York, Mario Cuomo, when he said, "A commencement speaker should think of himself as a body at an old-fashioned Irish wake. They need you in order to have a party, but no one really expects anything much out of you." So I'll try to keep that in mind as I speak. First and foremost, congratulations. This is a day of graduation, of anticipation, of some consternation, and maybe even a little sadness. But it is also a great day of celebration, and you've all earned it. Of course, you didn't do it alone. You're surrounded by family members and friends who have helped you make it this far. And we all think they deserve a great round of applause. They have sacrificed for you, and today they share this accomplishment with you. But what exactly is it that you've accomplished? Most of you have been students for just about as long as each of you can remember. You might think that I'm congratulating you on reaching the end of your education, or that this is a celebration of an end. But the fact is, the opposite is quite true. Today we're celebrating the beginning of your education. Your time here at the University of Illinois has prepared you well. You've met students from all over the country and from countries all over the world. You've studied in top-ranked academic programs and fields from business to engineering and, of course, to agriculture. In Champaign, you've had access to one of the nation's most vibrant and entrepreneurial small cities. I hear you're even building a supercomputer down the street, which will be the largest in the world. You all have the tools and the knowledge to turn every experience into a learning experience. But as you leave this campus and you enter the world at large, you won't have parents telling you what to do. Some of you may like that. You won't have teachers and professors to assign reading or to give you grades. You'll still have family and friends to support you. But from now on, your education is your job and no one else's job. There was a time, not that long ago, when this ability to educate yourself was nice, but it wasn't really essential. It used to be that a degree from a great university like this university, you were almost guaranteed a steady job with good income. For better or worse, that's not the world you're graduating into. Technology is moving fast. Today's jobs of the future might be obsolete by the day after tomorrow. And as President Obama emphasized in this year's State of the Union address, the competition for prosperity is truly global. We are competing with countries from Finland and Germany to China to India to Singapore and Japan. So while I don't want to sound like a lecturing father, I do want to say you need to be serious about your future. Because this competition is not abstract. Around the world, there are millions of people your age who want the same standard of living which you have had your entire life and what you want for your future. And they're quite willing to work for it. I've had the pleasure to travel to many countries around the world during my career, and I've met many of these young people. They are taking their futures very seriously. Whether you become a farmer, a pharmacist, a business person, or a public servant, this competition is real and it cannot be avoided. I'm not here to scare you or to make you wish for the good old days. If anything, you are lucky to compete in a global marketplace. After all, our society is based around the idea that healthy competition can be good for all of us. It can motivate us to do our best. It can produce the kind of innovations that make life better for all of us. It's a fundamental principle of free markets. Competition is not a zero-sum game. But playing this game well requires you to be flexible and to adapt. It requires the capacity for self-improvement, which I talked about earlier. It requires you to follow the example of Mark Twain, who once said, "I never let my schooling interfere with my education." Back when I graduated from college, quite a while ago, curiosity was a luxury. You could pretty much get by without it. Today, curiosity is an essential skill, one in which you must develop. How do you develop the skill of being curious? Well, here's one very practical way. If you get a chance to live and work abroad, take it. We often think of other countries as competitors, and they are, but they are also our partners. Their citizens buy our goods. We learn from their systems of government, some good, some bad. We learn from their cultures, and many of our companies, of their companies, help create American jobs here in this great state and throughout our country. And their economies are more and more intertwined with ours. For example, these days we hear a lot about China's growing economy, and there are a number of Chinese students who have come to this great university to learn, to excel, and add to the quality of life in this campus. I've had the chance to go to China several times, and I've met young men and women who are hungry for what we have. I recognize their ambition, their eagerness to learn and to engage. I remembered feeling rather impressed and a little bit nervous. When I think about our relationship with China, those memories are just or more important as any graph or any data set about what's going on in China. I certainly don't think that you should go away from this great state forever. In fact, I hope after your time here at the university, there's no state you'd rather end up calling home. But the better you understand the world outside your state and your country, the better you will be able to serve your state and your country. And even if you never get the chance to live abroad, you will certainly get the chance to live amongst many cultures and many different ways of seeing the world right here in America. For example, in my life, I've had the chance to work in both the public and private sectors. And each time I moved from one of these, there have been some people who at first didn't fully accept me. They felt I wasn't one of them. But the truth is, that broad perspective, which I had the pleasure of gaining in the public sector, helped me do a better job when I worked for private firms and companies. And the culture of accountability and performance that I learned in the private sector have helped make me a better public service. In both worlds, public and private, learning is a constant necessity. And this same curiosity can and should extend to politics. I know this is an area where being open-minded with different opinions is, to put it a little mildly, a rather difficult situation, especially with cable TV today. But I've always been proud to have friends from both parties, including some with whom I disagree deeply around politics. These friendships have helped me do my job because the truth about the progress in the country is that it comes from the center and not from the extremes. And remember that curiosity is not just about understanding someone's work or their ideology. At the end of the day, curiosity is about understanding people. One of my former business colleagues was a perfect example. The first time he met my wife, he could simply have made small talk, like, how's the weather? Instead, he asked every question imaginable, where she was from, how many siblings did she have, what her parents did, asked about her hobbies, her interests. Now, on one hand, this has nothing to do with his success in business. But on the other hand, because he's curious, he has the ability to understand where a person is coming from and the reasons they do the things they do. He can predict how someone will react in a given situation. And those qualities have everything to do with his success in business and his success in life. And if someone from your generation wants to be curious about people, you obviously have incredible tools at your disposal. Facebook has 640 million users. So I guess if you want to make them all your friends, you can attempt to. I bet some of you do not realize how new and profound some of this change is. A mere 11 years ago, I arrived at then Vice President Al Gore's campaign to chair his campaign. I went to Nashville, and it was a great endeavor. At the end of my first day, he turned to me and he asked a question that I found utterly confusing. He said, "Do you have a BlackBerry?" See, no reason why a particular piece of fruit would have anything to do with trying to win a presidential election. Of course, I said no. Today, I cannot be without that connectivity that BlackBerry gives me, not only during the day, but more importantly, all night. Use these new tools. Appreciate them. But at the same time, remember that an email or a text will never capture the richness of humanity like the pitch of a voice, the emotion in a face, or the look in a person's eyes. Don't allow you to forget the importance of human interaction, even in this digital world. In many ways, I could not imagine a better time to address the university graduates. As many of you know, my brother Rich is retiring from public service tomorrow. And I think of my work under President Obama, the crowning achievement of my public life, which is a polite way of saying that it is not in too distant future, that I'd like to spend time out of the office and more time with my wife, my children, and also my grandchildren. Step by step, my generation is leaving the spotlight, and your generation is entering it. And so in this moment, I find myself thinking about my family history. My ancestors were Irish immigrants. Like so many before and after them, they came to America because they believed that this was a place where they could work hard and build a better future for their kids. They imagined a country where their descendants could be anything they wanted to be. And today I stand here in a very real way, the product of their imagination, and that is truly, truly a part of the American story. But at the same time, there are things my ancestors could never have imagined. That my father and brother would both be mayors of Chicago. That I would serve the chief of staff of the first African-American president of the United States of America. And I'm also quite certain that they could never have imagined the existence of Twitter or Angry Birds, which I've been told is a game on iPhone. But in all seriousness, so many of the changes in this country have been beyond anything that could possibly have been imagined. That's an important part of the American story as well. So when I think about your generation, or think about my grandchildren, I imagine you continuing your education for the rest of your life. I imagine you embracing the global marketplace and succeeding in this global competition. I imagine you taking full advantage of this constantly changing world. But I also know that so much of what you accomplish will be beyond all of our imagination. More than any wisdom I can offer, that is the beauty of today. The world is big. It is full of possibilities. It is yours. And on behalf of myself and your families, let me say that we are truly curious to see what you do with it. Congratulations, good luck, and God bless you.